This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, what I can tell you is Damon Evans and I, he hired me. We're on the same page of what we want to do for this program, what we want to do for this university. His focus and my focus are exactly the same. So our focus right now is strictly the NCAA tournament and this team. But all I can say to that is that me and Damon are on the same page, and we always have been.
So that was Kevin Willard after Selection Sunday. He spoke to the media, and of course he was asked about the report. John Rothstein had it early on Sunday. The tweet said sources Maryland's working on a new contract for Kevin Willard that will make him one of the top 10 highest paid coaches in college basketball. The deal will include one of the highest revenue share budgets in the country, along with a new $50 million practice facility. That facility, they announced the groundbreaking when they hired him, so that's got to be finished soon. Alas, no deal yet, but we assume it's going to get done, and supposedly they're working on getting it done before they leave for Seattle, which is tomorrow. Assuming this deal gets done, what does this mean for Maryland?
I mean, I think this is proven to be a sage hire. I've been incredibly impressed with Willard, and one of the things that I think makes people stand out in their fields and is so foundational in my history covering sports, but not everybody has it. It is the ability to quickly admit when you have done, when you've missed the plot, when you have skewed things too far in one direction, whether it is you've built too young of a roster or you've fallen for the same profile and type of player over and over and over again, or you've reached in a particular direction. Like, I think he probably knew by New Year's Eve last year that they were cooked, that the pieces didn't fit. We could see it early. They could see it early. And instead of trying to salvage that thing or figure out who he could bring in on the periphery to prop some of these kids up and to try to make them who he thought they were when he plucked them from the portal or when he recruited them as hotly as he did, He was willing to scrap the whole thing. And, I mean, this is only 2 years in. I mean, he's midway through his second season here.
Third year.
No, but I'm saying last year.
Oh, okay.
Like Christmas time last year. This guy is not even 1.5 seasons through his regime, and he's already realizing it's got to be a total course correction. And we've got to spend as much time, if not more, coaching up this group I put here that's not going to be good enough as we do making sure Derek Queen is coming here, making sure we're recruiting sharpshooters, making sure our portal work is at the forefront. Not everybody's willing to do that, and not everybody's willing to do that just a year and a half into a multi-year deal at a school and at a conference that he just got to. So I find that to be
it's refreshing.
Refreshing, endearing. Like, when Bill Belichick was at the top of his game, Bill Belichick would realize when he messed something up before the league had, and he'd be pawning that thing off for you for more than it's still worth. Not quite as much as he paid for it, But whatever he put in draft capital, whatever he might have spent in free agency, if he quickly realizes it's not what I thought it was, you cut bait and you move on. And there's a certain ruthlessness to that, but there's also, you've got to be really comfortable in your own skin, and you've got to be a little bit cocksure to do that kind of thing. And I applaud him for doing it. And I think he got a pretty good sense of what it's going to take to compete in the Big Ten. And look, I got to give him credit, too, for getting these boosters to spend. I mean, the people who are spending now, they didn't just get rich. Like, they didn't hit the lottery for $1 billion. Like, their pockets have been deep forever.
And 2 years ago, they weren't willing to spend.
Well, and I'll tell you who sucked at that part of the job. Terz.
Yes.
And Terz here now would have really sucked, as much as the world has changed since he quit on the Terps to now. How much it's continued to change. You've got to buy that. You've got to be able to sell your vision. You've got to be a salesman. You've got to be willing to do it, to put that time in. And you got to be a closer. Because, I mean, we all like Damon Evans, but who do you think is the closer?
No, it's the coach.
Yeah.
They got to like the coach.
Yeah, and they got to buy in that if I give you this much money, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, how I see it with Kevin Willard, he came in year one. I think we'd all agree he overachieved. That was more Turgeon's team, and he was able to win a game in the tournament. It was a big swing and miss last year. And I think you can say this year they vastly overachieved. This team was predicted to finish 10th in the Big Ten prior to the season, and he just hit home run after home run after home run in the portal. But all of those guys had question marks. Jacoby Gillespie coming from Belmont. Selden Miguel was sixth man of the year in the AAC last year. Rodney Rice has barely played basketball over the past couple of years. How is Julian Reese, the senior, going to blend in with Derek Queen, the five-star freshman? But what we saw, especially at the end of the regular season, and we played that clip during his introductory press conference during a TMI a couple weeks ago, bringing the swagger back to this program and finishing those last two home games back-to-back sellouts where there was so much buzz, and we were there at the Michigan State game where the students are lined up to get into the Xfinity Center hours and hours and hours before tip-off, getting the buzz back for Maryland, and you just hope that this is sort of just a stepping stone.
Well, the key, Jason, and you're right, is the money. Like, the getting the boosters. If they're going to be competitive in revenue sharing, that allows them, because, you know, who were we talking to yesterday? These are employees now. They get paid. This isn't the old college basketball system where, you know, that they get their food and they get travel and they get some gear maybe every once in a while. These guys get paid now, and if you can pay competitively with the other schools, you can get
the best. But think of the buy-in he's going to get from the boosters now.
Yeah.
Because it worked.
Yep.
Worked. Not only is it getting the right group of kids with the right mentality at the right price who can do the right things for you on the basketball court, but it's got to happen fast.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are going to be here for a year, and so it can't take you 3 months to gel. And so he showed this year, when I get it wrong, I'm the first to admit defeat. I understand my shortcomings and will go hard in a different direction. I'm not going to just try to play my style or push what I believe in down people's throats. And I can get a group to believe in itself quickly and get it into gear. Because let's face it, it's going to be a totally different team next year.
Well, and I'm not saying he's this guy, but what made Pat Riley great is he could change. Like, Pat Riley was the Showtime Lakers. He gets to the Knicks, and they're playing bully ball. Like, it's a completely different.
First game that was on TV this year, what did I do? I came in here and said, it's a completely different team, and they play, I don't even recognize this style of basketball.
Yeah.
I literally don't even, this is not Maryland Terrapins basketball. We haven't seen this style of Maryland Terrapins basketball in a long time.
Yeah, it was going out and getting the shooters. And now you're just hoping you can put the cherry on top, finishing this season strong, getting to at least the second weekend of the tournament. You're going to have a first-round pick in the NBA in Derek Queen. That's only going to reflect strongly on your program. And then, by the way, going back to the $50 million practice facility that should be opening, you would think, soon.
Yeah, they broke ground on that at the Willard press conference. They announced that, yeah. So, like, that should be done.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, have you been on that campus? It's not like there's not a lot going on on that campus.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, they just built a football facility, an alumni facility that are state of the art.
Yes, you know, they're doing a lot, and
like, there's cranes galore.
Yeah, Well, it's like a city there, College Park. We have a huge Tuesday show. We are going to be very busy today. It's the Calm Before the Storm, first night of the first four, which you can hear right here on 105.7 The Fan, Westwood One's coverage tonight and tomorrow of the first four games. Guest-wise, we get started at 3:30. Our weekly chat with our friend Rita Hubbard. We'll talk Ravens, O's, and Terps with her. Clarence Hill has covered the Cowboys for a long time. He's with a website now called alldallas.com. We'll talk about Cooper Rush with him at 4 o'clock. Rob Bradford, EI, covers the Red Sox, but also baseball isn't boring. Get his thoughts on the Red Sox, the AL East, and more at 4:30. And Chris Nockey, how's he feel about how the Big Ten tournament ended and the Terps' draw heading to Seattle this week? He joins us at 5.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with the three teams that we obviously follow the most closely and care about the most in this town. And Rob Bradford, like, depending on who you trust and who you believe, this Rafael Devers thing is far from smoothed over and all nice and cuddly. Like, he's not traveling with the team to their exhibitions in Mexico. I don't really know that he wants the DH. So we'll discuss some of that.
That was a lie earlier?
I think what he's saying outwardly as a person who's paid a lot of money to play baseball in Boston and understands Boston fans might be a little different than what he's saying privately to Cora when he looks at some of these lineups. He's had what, like an ouchie all year?
Yeah.
The kind of ouchie that, boy, that can pop up at any place, any time. It's a back, right? Isn't it a back?
Yeah. And that's
Tricky bone. Bone backs. Now, if he's got a zero gravity mattress like me, he might have no excuse. Well, he'd have no excuse. You couldn't play that card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Saw Westy. They got Westy the right mattress. And I don't know if that was Mattress Warehouse or not. It could have been.
Could have been better than whatever the heck you're sleeping on before.
Boom. I think you got like a mattress topper.
I think they shipped him a mattress down there. And there you go. Obviously, a lot to talk about with the Terps. And interested to hear from Ronnie Stanley. So.
Yeah, the savings they get on not showing the spring training games got them a mattress for Westy, so that worked out very well. Coming up next, Terps take on Grand Canyon on Friday. That's a 4:30 tip pregame coverage right here on 3:30 right here on 105.7 The Fan. Any concern about an upset? Could Grand Canyon beat Maryland? We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
We haven't been great coming off breaks, but I think this break was much needed just from the fact that the grind was real those last four games. I think the pressure, the stress of where we were, how we were playing, I think that was a little bit of a mental fatigue on our guys.
That was Kevin Willard before the start of the Big Ten tournament talking about breaks. And Maryland last played Saturday. They lost to Michigan at the buzzer. They're going to play Grand Canyon on Friday, a game you can hear right here on 105.7 The Fan, beginning with pregame coverage at 3:30. Grand Canyon, the 13th seed. Maryland, the 4th seed. Jason, Maryland's a 10.5-point favorite, according to the book I'm looking at right now. Are you concerned about an upset on Friday?
I mean, I haven't bet this game. I do think you could draw up a script where this game is close. And, I mean, could they lose? I mean, of course they could lose. These kinds of...
happens all the time in this tournament.
It's kind of why this thing is as big as it is, isn't
it's great,
it? I mean, if this kind of thing never happened, we wouldn't have everybody who's never watched a game all season putting in 15 different bracket permutations.
To your point, it sucks when it happens to your team, but one of the things that makes this thing great is that it happens basically every year.
Yeah, in multitudes.
Yes.
It just depends to one extreme or the other. So could it happen? Absolutely. Will it happen? I'm not going to tell. Are you putting it? I'm not. It's not a Sharpie game for me. There's other draws they could have got against some lesser teams that don't include the type of travel that this does, where I would have preferred it. Now, I'm also not going to sit here and tell you it's doomsday and it's the worst case scenario. I can come up with a lot of mid-major and small schools that I would have feared way more than Grand Canyon. But having to go to Seattle, being a team that has, I mean, we can even go back to their early season neutral site outings. There was one guy you had to stop with Villanova. They couldn't stop him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That game became a real struggle. The first half, they really had issues. Right? That was one of those games where Queen's first half was tough. Second half, big boy. But slow starts in weird settings. They've been a slow starting team in general lately. And sometimes the other team dictates to them more than they should. So, I'll tell you this. I don't think they're running them out of the gym. Like, at least not for 40 minutes. I don't think this is a 40-minute beatdown.
Well, something that we have seen is teams that play with slow tempo dictate that pace to the turf.
Exactly.
But that's not the case here, yeah. Where you're looking at Grand Canyon. They're the 14th fastest team in the country, according to KenPom. Very veteran team. You have four seniors, all five of them upperclassmen. They're 149th in offensive efficiency, 67th in defensive efficiency. It's not a good shooting team. They shoot 31.5% from three, which is good for Maryland. And they don't rebound the ball particularly well.
Hey, Maryland had a situation like this. Now, it was under Turgeon, but he had a good team. They were the sixth seed in the 2019 tournament. And they played Belmont, who we're familiar with now because of Jacoby Gillespie. Yep. They were down 6.5 and only won the game by 2 points. Like, Maryland was the sixth, Belmont was the 11. And Maryland almost lost. They came very close to losing that basketball game.
I mean, how to handle this week, just from a human standpoint, is tricky. We can now go back. I mean, 6 or 7 games, really. And a lot of these games, they ended up getting to 80 points in the end or getting to 75 points in the end. But against some of these lesser teams, it's been a little bit of a struggle. And sometimes they get into these scenarios where they settle for bad threes. They don't really get going in their offense. They don't share the ball as much as they should. And then they hit another gear and they turn it on. But we also know, a tale as old as time, the longer you let a team with nothing to lose hang around.
Oh, yeah.
And the crowd starts to turn. A couple guys pick up ticky-tack fouls that could have gone either way, but they go against you. All of a sudden, we're late in the first half, and it's the Gaparis of the world and the DHSs of the world on the court more than you'd like, because a couple of guys are in a little bit of foul trouble, and you'd like to think that your twos could play with their ones, but some of them can and some of them can't. Like, I think the first half will be telling. How quickly is he going to his bench?
Yeah.
After another long layoff, because he went quickly to him despite not playing many minutes in Illinois. But that's one thing, and they obviously have the Fighting Illini's number, but the layoff there, and they had their best half of the season, dropping 57 points on them.
But you feel like they own them? Like, I almost feel like that's the outlier.
They totally own Brad Underwood.
You take Illinois out of the mix, and you go back and think about the first half that this team has played the last 2 or 3 weeks, what the first half looked like against Penn State, what the first half looked like at times against Rutgers, what the first half, looked like against Northwestern. Like, my concern is that this looks a little bit like that.
Yeah, the Northwestern, because that was when the turnovers were nuts. I think they had 11 turnovers in the first half. They couldn't get into a flow at all. I'm with you. I think the first half will be very telling. If they have a strong first half, you probably have the ability to kind of cruise to a victory with how poor a three-point shooting team that Grand Canyon is.
Beltway Ben, how concerned are you about an upset here on Friday?
I texted you guys right before the show, or the draft show, or selection show rather, started, and said I didn't want to play Grand Canyon. But the Terps can outshoot them by a large margin. They do play 4-guard lineup. They're not big. Their guards are lengthy, though, and Grant Foster is going to be an issue. I think, honestly, the recipe to success, play zone, force them to shoot. They cannot shoot the ball. They can get to the basket. And I don't, on the Terps 5, I don't know anybody that can match up truly with Grant Foster. He's long, he's got NBA game, he's older, he's 25 because he had a heart issue and missed like a year and a half of basketball, transferred there and has been awesome. He was awesome last year. This year he's been up and down, but with the way the Terps are, I would go zone, and also offensively, get the ball inside. They need to have Reese and Queen working down low, because in the paint they are undersized. Now outside they're long, they can do stuff like that, but inside they're undersized.
Terps and Grand Canyon. It's Friday at 4:30. Pregame coverage right here on 105.7 The Fan at 3:30 on Friday. Coming up next here, we get to the Orioles, though. And is it Suarez? Is it Povich? Is it Povich? Is it Suarez? Who's going to be the starter on the back end of this rotation? Some necessary roughness next here on The Fan.
We can't have enough. We learned that last year. So, you know, hopefully we have tough decisions to make at the end of camp, and we have a lot of guys throwing the ball well.
Brandon Hyde talking about his rotation and tough decisions to be made at the end of camp. And I guess it gets a little tougher because Grayson Rodriguez won't be ready for the start of the season. But we've been having this conversation seemingly for a while now about Cade Povich and Albert Suarez. And not to speak for you two, but I feel like we all think Albert Suarez should be in the bullpen and Cade Povich giving a lefty at the back of the rotation. That said, they seem to be dead set on Albert Suarez, who leads them in innings by far this spring with 17. Looks like Albert Suarez is going to be in this rotation. And Cade Povich, who's starting their game today, is going to start the year in the minors.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen. And Cade Povich is going to go tonight, and Charlie Morton got scratched. Morton's going to get his work in on a backfield.
Yes.
They'll put Povich, you know, in a more competitive setting. I get the sense, though, that no matter what he does, barring somebody else getting hurt, I don't think Cade Povich is going to make this team. I don't think that they have built Suarez up to then move him in the pen for a couple of reasons. And do I think hubris plays a role in this? I absolutely do. I think that's why Dominguez and Soto are being pushed up the way they are, because, well, we went and got them, and we're paying them decent money, so they must be good. Look how long they ran Kimbrel out there last year when we were begging for them to cut bait for the good of their team, for the good of their season, for their playoff potential. But what did they do? They ate it till the bitter end, because they always know better. Mm-hmm. So I think the smart, logical move would be to take Suarez and put him in the pen, and he could fill a multitude of roles there for you. And Cade Povich has presented himself well, and he did pitch well in September, and he is one of the few young starting pitchers with upside who is major league ready in your entire system. And he's also a lefty.
Yep.
This kid started games at Yankee Stadium. I was at one under duress. This kid had his problems throwing strikes, went to the minors, worked it out, came back, got better. This kid has had absolutely dominant performances this spring. And like Jackson Holliday before him, and like so many others, they're more inclined to stuff him in AAA than let him continue to ride that wave now and see what they have. Kobe Mayo, we knew he wasn't making this team. Kobe Mayo should have been traded a long time ago. Yep. Kobe Mayo's value is not getting higher, despite whatever they would have you believe. And they've waited so long to play Kobe Mayo on the right side of the infield and or outfield. They're not going to fool scouts at AAA. They're gonna know if he can play or not, and that's probably going to be a problem. Kobe Mayo sent back to Norfolk today, had some interesting comments. You know, These kids are sick of it, and they're over it, and they know what's going on here. And Norby had to spend 3 years there, and Stowers had to spend 3 years there, and Mayo's doing it, and Povich is about to do it. And I just don't think they'll ever understand the human element of this, the playing the long game element of this. They just don't get it. But, boy, they're high on Suarez, and he was their find, and he's looked good in the spring. And they obviously are in a pitching crunch. But I would, it's a long season. And if you're as good at this as you say you are, you should be willing, especially under these circumstances, to let Cade Povich try this at the major league level for a while and see what it's like.
For me, it's not even that I think Suarez will be fine as a starter. I'm not worried about his performance as a starter. I'm worried that they're just going to yo-yo him exactly like they did last year, exactly like they did with Tyler Wells before Suarez did. I just want him to have a defined role from game one to 162, because do we think he's going to stick in the starting rotation all year long? I think he'll inevitably move back to the bullpen at some point. And with Povich, I would like to see him get a bit of a runway because of how he finished last year in September with multiple really strong starts. And the biggest number for him this spring in 9 2/3 innings pitched, one walk. One walk. That's it. That's what totally plagued him in all of his poor starts last year. So if he is feeling more confident in his control, I'd like to see him do it in real games.
Jason, there's another fact to this, or part of this, and Jacob Calvin-Meyer, I think, brought it up, and we had him on the other day, and that is you put Suarez in the bullpen with what's going on in the back end of your bullpen right now. It's Felix Bautista's off day. Who do you feel comfortable getting three outs late in the game from a righty? Is it Brian Baker? Is it Sir Anthony Dominguez? Or is it
it's Cano? It's Cano
or Suarez. But like, if I gave you the choices of Dominguez and Baker or Suarez, you're going to take Suarez.
Yeah, but they're not even going to create that for themselves.
No, but that's my point. That's why this makes even so much more sense.
Oh, I'm with you. But they're not going to do that.
No.
They'll do that 3 or 4 weeks into the season when they get dragged kicking and screaming into it. And is that going to be good for Suarez, or is that going to be janky for Suarez?
Probably janky. I like that word.
And whether it's in that role or something that we have concerns about is this starting rotation eating as many innings as they did last year, having Suarez.
They're not going to.
That's what I'm saying. As having Suarez in that long role, especially early on in the season while these pitchers are still getting built up, I think there's a lot of value to that.
Do you think there's a chance by June 1st that this is where what we think should be at the start is where it is? Like by June 1st, Cade Povich is in the rotation and Albert Suarez is in the bullpen.
No.
I think they're just going to keep it like this.
I think they'll try their get ready for waiver claims.
Oh, they like that.
Get ready. They'll strike gold with Danny Colom or the Danny Colom type. Or that's what they'll tell themselves. So no, I think we'll get into this next week. I don't think the cavalry's at Norfolk. I'm just going to let you know. Like
I don't think
the cavalry's there in the bullpen. I don't think outside of Cade Povich, the cavalry's going to be there starting pitching wise. And I think it's 4A guys and not prospects who would be getting the call. Like if Kobe Mayo's starting the year in Norfolk, he better spend 2 months in Norfolk learning to play some position other than third base. So like. You're looking at the Daz Camerons of the world. You're looking at the Vavras of the world. You're looking at, you know, I don't know if Soto starts the year in the majors or whatever, but like, it's Dylan Beavers ain't the next man up. So they're going to have to add from outside the organization. Do I think they're going to spend for David Robertson? No. I think they're going to claim a couple guys. Now, good luck claiming dudes who have options because those guys are usually being clung on to for the same reason you would covet a guy with options. Maybe it'll happen. But no, I believe they trust their ability to find diamonds in the rough. And so that's going to keep Povich in AAA, and that's going to keep Suarez in the rotation.
So you think Suarez stays in the rotation all year?
I mean, I don't think they look at him as a reliever.
That would shock me if he stays a starter all year.
I mean, he's going to give him 5 to 6 mostly solid innings.
It's what he does.
Yeah.
It's what he does. He kept the rotation intact last year.
Oh, yeah.
He was critical. He was critical.
Is it possible that they just know more than us?
They definitely know more than us. They're just not very good at executing plans that make their team better. It's do they apply all the information they have, and do they have enough checks and balances?
Well, that they don't.
Do they have enough old school offsetting calculator Uber Alice? And I think we know the answer to that.
Uber Alice.
That's a good word. Hey, coming up next, let's take a look at baseball overall. Our Twib notes. We had a baseball game that counted this morning. We'll recap also what's going on with the Yankees. They got some pitching injuries. We'll hear from Brian Cashman. And check in on the Red Sox and the Rafael Devers situation. It's Twib notes next here on The Fan.
Digs this one out. He's got a base hit to left center that'll bring home Hernandez. 3-1 Dodgers as Will Smith knocks in his first run of the year. From Japanese players. Base hit to left field for Hernandez to score Ohtani. 0-2 to Shaw. Swing and a miss. That does it. Dodgers win on opening day in Japan.
Highlights courtesy of Fox. The Dodgers beat the Cubs in Tokyo 4-1 this morning. Yamamoto and Imanaga started the game. Imanaga went 4 no-hit innings. Did walk 4, but then left after throwing 69 pitches, Bone. Yamamoto, 5 innings, just 1 run, 3 hits, 1 walk. He gets the win in this one.
Baseball is officially back. Interesting lineup for the Dodgers. We knew that Betts wasn't on the trip, and then Freddie Freeman, a late scratch.
See, Betts has lost like 15 pounds.
Yeah, it's a weird illness that he's got, and I don't know if they have exactly a timetable. I mean, I will say this about the Dodgers, and we all crown them and coronate them, and you know what? They have the most best Major League Baseball players under contract of any team in the majors, and it's not even close. But, like, have you looked at the, like, they still don't, like, Gosselin, you don't know when he's coming back. May, you don't know when he's coming back. Kershaw, whatever, he's hanging around teaching people his pitch grips.
It's just, it's almost like he's a mascot at this point. Like, when they need him, they'll use him, whatever.
Betts has got a funky illness. We don't know when he's coming back. I mean, do they really have a shortstop? I don't know. Like, they're still going to win 100 and whatever games, but. They never get there. Like, you never see the full complement of what they have. Like,
they had
never,
no starters in the World Series a year ago.
I think Jack Flaherty started game
No, I think they had like 21 guys start games for them last year. I mean, it's just, it's a cavalcade of people. Cavalcade. Bobby Miller's back in the minors now. Like, it's just, hey, you know, Andy Páez isn't starting in center field now. Whatever. Don't win 110.
And they got Kike Hernandez back.
I think he's the starting shortstop.
Yeah. They love him.
He's not a shortstop.
I know.
They make it work. Can I say one thing, though? And I'm pretty sure I said the same exact thing last year. I find it's awesome that they're playing in Tokyo. And there's a ton of demand for it. And I saw the ticket prices.
Cheapest tickets, like $4.
Like, that's all amazing. But why is the first game of the season air at 3 a.m. local time in L.A.? Like, how does that make any sense?
Because they're playing in Japan.
They're playing in Tokyo. Well, it's a time difference.
I know what I'm saying, but in terms of the fan experience.
So do you want to have, like, should they play it in the middle of the night in Japan
Tokyo?
So that we get it in prime time?
Yeah. Like, so the fans are.
You don't find that a little odd?
Well, it's just.
I understand how time zones work.
I understand how time zones work.
Have you ever watched the Olympics
first game?
You know they've, like, played games in Australia and stuff, right?
Yes.
Like, they played games in London last year in the middle of the season in a bastardized soccer pitch.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I find it odd. I'll get off my soapbox.
You find it odd that they start the game in the time zone where they're playing it at a normal time?
I'm saying to maximize the viewership. For the United States, for the game, the first game of the season, I don't see how this does that.
It's one of 162.
I know.
Ben, did you have something to add on this?
I was just saying I woke up for it.
there you go.
People should be more dedicated.
Mic drop.
He
likes baseball more than you. G-Unit. I don't think G-Unit slept in 3 days.
G-Unit
hasn't slept since last Wednesday.
He wrapped up the college basketball podcast, the first pitch, and then transitioned.
And he's got a live Twitch in between.
Yes.
And then if you ask him any question about the, what are the fake tournaments, the crown or whatever, he'll drop what he's doing and answering you on Twitter. G-Unit is he's an animal.
He's a unit.
This morning's game was on Fox. Tomorrow morning's game is on FS1. They play again in Tokyo. But let's go to the Yankees and Brian Cashman talking about his pitching injuries.
We've taken a number of hits in the starting rotation. Certainly can't afford to take too many more. So if we can obviously rely on what we have and explore what's outside at the same time. Yeah, but this time of year, it makes it difficult. So. You know, we've had these conversations many times over, and, you know, you hope that you can withstand injuries and avoid injuries, you know, early from spring training up through the draft, because going outside the organization is that much more difficult to do. So we'll rely on what we have, and we'll explore,
you know, what's limited to, available on the marketplace, and you know, see what we do. But obviously, we're gonna have to step up in all areas, and, you know, because we've lost some key guys. But that's also part of the business.
Luis Gil is going to miss a while. Gerrit Cole is going to miss the season. Clark Schmidt is saying he's going to be ready to make his start on April 3rd. We shall see. But there's trouble in River City there.
And remember, this is the boss's kids, not the boss. So, like, it's not going to be go take on somebody else's terrible contract and hope you can fix them. Like, those days, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's.
He's crying.
They're not going over the luxury tax and all that. So it's not going to be like, you know, take a salary dump for a couple prospects and we'll turn him into a number four starter. Like Cashman doesn't have it like that anymore. Honestly, the more that comes out of their camp, the more sick I get about how little happened here.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. Is now they've got, I think, a lesser overall lineup. They'll probably be better in the field because it's hard to be worse. I still don't think they'll run the bases all that well. They have significant flaws, but their bullpen is going to be a bunch of bad man pajamas.
Yeah, Devin Williams is a stud.
And they'll pitch enough to probably still be better than the Orioles, but they are certainly much more vulnerable now than they seemed 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, and the Red Sox are dealing with their own issues injury-wise and Raffy, and yeah, it just seems like a missed opportunity going back to a couple of years ago when both of them were down.
Devers, he mentioned Raffy. What the hell is going on with Rafael Devers?
He's got an ouchie.
Yeah.
He hasn't played that much. The team has kind of tried to make you believe that nothing to see here. He's on board. He's a team guy. He'll do first base. He'll DH, whatever. But I'm reading people, including Sean McAdam, who's covered that team for a long time, who are basically saying, don't believe what they're selling outwardly. Inwardly, he may want to trade. Inwardly, he feels like he's a baseball player, not just a hitter at this stage of his career. And if these guys don't want to use him where he thinks he's best in the field, maybe somebody else will. Depending on who you read, he's ready to go health-wise to Mexico City, but he just doesn't want to go there. There's a lot of ish going on there. Now, I do think Cora is one of the best on the planet at handling this, but that's a tough place for disgruntled superstars. That's a tough city. Take Red Sox, Celtics, Bruins, Patriots. So let's just say I'm real interested to see what Rob Bradford has to say about this. Because I don't think this is a nothing burger.
Rob Bradford joins us at 4:30 today. I'd be very curious to hear.
From WEI.
Yes. Coming up next year on the program, Ronnie Stanley did a Zoom with the media, of course, announcing his deal, re-signing with the Baltimore Ravens. What did Ronnie Stanley have to say? We're going to hear from him next here on The Fan.